නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ Hope to start a new sutta today. So that is called Magandhiya Sutta, which is available in the Majjhima Nikaya. I am showing the English translation of this sutta. Basically, the Magandhiya mentioned in this particular sutta, according to the commentary, is a nephew of another Magandhiya mentioned in the Sutta Nipata. So there are several Magandhiyas available at various suttas. So this name is a little frequently known name. And one occasion there is one Magandhiya Brahmin who wanted to give his daughter, her name is also Magandhiya, to the Buddha, and Buddha denied it, and the parents became enlightened, and that Magandhiya is there. So, and there's another Magandhiya. He is called a wanderer Magandhiya. So this is a wanderer. So this wanderer Magandhiya, according to the commentary, has some relationship with that previously mentioned Brahmin Magandhiyas. Anyway, the point here is that in one occasion Buddha was living in Kuru country, where it is called Kammasa Dhamma is the village, and there Buddha spread his grass in the fire chamber of Brahmin belonging to the Bharadwaja clan. Now he is also called Bharadwaja Brahmin because he belongs to the Bharadwaja clan, and there's a fire chamber, and in which Buddha has spread his grass, very much like a grass mat, and on which Buddha was maybe meditating. Now basically Buddha also has spent time at various places. So commonly known places are Jetavanarama, Purvarama. So those are the typical places we know. But some occasions are there. Buddha alone visit certain places, and he dwell with seclusion. And sometimes he purposely go there to help someone. So something like that has happened. And here this time also, according to the commentary, Buddha has gone to this particular place and trying to spend there some time just to help this Magandhiya, because he has seen Magandhiya has a certain potential to get enlightened, to become an arahant, but currently he is following something different, wanderers teachings that he is currently following. And but Buddha knew that he has the potential, so Buddha has went to this particular Bharadwaja's fire chamber, and he has spent some time. And then in the morning, so he went to collect alms food, and after having meals, so he has gone to a secluded place to spend in seclusion. Now at that time, a wanderer Magandhiya arrives to meet this Brahmin Bharadwaja. So they had a cordial discussion, and there he noticed that grass spread, and he is asking to whom that this spread of grass being prepared in Master Bharadwaja's fire chamber. So this is the exact point Buddha wanted to highlight, where he wants to have a kind of a discussion related to himself, related to Buddha, and he is making a little provision for that. And Magandhiya noticed Buddha's grass spread, but he didn't know that to whom it belongs to, and he is asking from this Brahmin Bharadwaja to whom it belongs to. So there the Brahmin Bharadwaja explains that it belongs to the Buddha, and he explains many qualities of the Buddha. Typically, Itipiso Bhagava Arahang Samma Sambuddho Vijjacharna Sampanno Sugato Lokavidu Anuttaro Prisadamma Sarati Satta Deva Manusanam Buddho Bhagava. Now these are the typical verse that we are using explaining 9 main qualities of the Buddha. So basically this Brahmin Bharadwaja give an explanation to wanderer Magandhya using same thing. So this may be a stock phrase in suttas quite often used to just explain that how someone has explained about the Buddha. So they already have had a certain amount of faith in Buddha, so they are very much has gone forth, or they have strong faith, or they are the lay followers of the Buddha. And whenever they want to introduce Buddha to another person, so they give an account of qualities, good esteem qualities of the Buddha. And here also Brahmin Bharadwaja is given an explanation to wanderer Magandhya. But anyway, Magandhya was not happy about it. So indeed, Master Bharadwaja, it is an ill sight. We see when we see the bed of that destroyer of growth, Master Gautam. Now he is using a very strong word called Bhunahuno. Bhunahuno means the destroyer of the growth. So who is avoiding the growth, who is stopping the growth, or who is destroying the growth. Now this is a kind of a accuse made to the Buddha. And after this is heard by faithful Bharadwaja, he was shocked. He was basically disturbed, and basically he warns wanderer Magandhya, be careful what you say, Magandhya, be careful what you say. So basically he is with good faith on the Buddha, and he heard this word from Magandhya, and he is now warning to Magandhya. He is explaining that Buddha is well recognized, and many learned Brahmins, learned householders, learned recluses have full confidence in the Buddha. And there's interesting teachings and the discipline that Buddha teaches. So likewise, he is explaining to a certain extent that it is not suitable to mention like that or regard like that about the Buddha. And anyway, Magandhya still maintains that view. He say, even I am in front of the Buddha, I would say the same thing because it is available in our discourses. Now that's also interesting, because that has come down in our discourses. So they also have a book, it seems. They also have their teachings. They are coming from generation to generation in these wanderers, Paribrajakas. And in their recitations, so this is mentioned. So why is that? So now, what's the reason why he is referring, and what exactly is available in the book is now coming after Buddha explains that. Anyway, the point here highlighted by Magandhya is that he is not afraid of telling that because in his book it is mentioned. Now sometimes people take so seriously about what is available in the book, and in certain other sutta is called Chanki Sutta. The Chanki Sutta also, a Brahmin Kapatika explains how people are accepting based on coming from generation to generation, and sometimes coming from their holy books. So they don't want to alter it, they don't want to question it, simply they want to blindly follow it, what is available in the book. So that is one tradition that people are going through, and many people are going through, not just a little amount, a large, vast amount of people are following something like that. So this wanderer Magandhya is also in the same category. So he has read that book, or he has heard that recitations coming from generation to generation. In those recitations, this is mentioned, and there he mentioned the same thing to Brahmin Bharadwaja. Now Buddha is listening to this whole conversation. That's another interesting point. And Buddha also is listening to the same conversation through the divine eye. Buddha is not in the presence of these people. He was in a forest grove, but he is hearing what is going through between Magandhya, the wanderer Magandhya, and the Brahmin Bharadwaja. And anyway, Brahmin Bharadwaja make a reservation. He is asking from wanderer Magandhya, so if you don't have any objection, so may I tell this to Master Gotama? So now he wants to tell this anyway, that there is this kind of an accusation regarding the Buddha coming from these wanderers. I am, as a faithful follower of the Buddha, I hope to sort of explain that to the Buddha so that Buddha may give a proper explanation. Now therefore he is asking from wanderer Magandhya some kind of a permission to do so. And Magandhya is also telling, no problem, please go ahead and tell it. Let Master Bharadwaja be at ease. So don't worry about it, don't think about it, don't take it as a burden. So I give full authority for you to tell the same thing. Even in front of the Buddha, I'll tell the same thing, because it is coming in our book. Now the whole thing was heard by the Buddha, and now their conversation is over. And then Buddha arrives Bharadwaja's place. And then where the grass was spread, so there Buddha arrives. And interestingly, Buddha immediately asks from Bharadwaja that is this kind of a conversation had happened. So that is where Brahmin Bharadwaja, I was struck, and with his hair standing on end. So basically, he got goosebumps, he got really surprised how Buddha has knew the whole conversation. So maybe he also become further faithful on the Buddha, because Buddha didn't want to hide anything, and Buddha himself has heard the discussion, which is somewhat controversial. And still Buddha wants to clarify it. Buddha didn't want to go away from it or escape from it. Rather, Buddha wants to confront it. And hearing that Buddha knew everything, when he is referring the same conversation he has had, now this Brahmin Bharadwaja become awestruck. And he was quite surprised. And he mentioned to the Buddha that I really want to tell it to Master Gotama. But anyway, Master Gotama has anticipated us. So you knew that. You knew the whole conversation. But anyway, I want to tell it to you. So while this discussion is going on, now wanderer Magandhya also comes to the same place. Now that is an interesting that it seems that this is like a drama where a kind of a discussion happened between Bharadwaja and Magandhya, and then Buddha heard that discussion by far away, being in far away through his divine eye. Then Magandhya goes away, and then Buddha arrives there and talks about the same thing to Brahmin Magandhya, and he was surprised. And when that discussion is going on, again Magandhya is arriving there. Now after kind of a cordial discussion between these three, Buddha, Magandhya and the Bharadwaja, now Buddha immediately comes to the subject. So that means Buddha didn't want to, you know, spend some time with something else. Rather, he wants to attack the same place. He wants to address the issue, because this is the exact point that Buddha wants to highlight. This is the exact point why he was here, maybe aiming to preach Magandhya. Now there's a very good theme available for that. So as a result of that, Buddha immediately asked Magandhya why he is basically using the term destroyer of the growth, and Buddha himself is giving the explanation, and he's asking Magandhya, the eye delights in forms, takes delights in forms, rejoices in forms. That has been tamed by the Tathagata, guarded, protected and restrained. And he teaches the Dhamma for its restraint. Was it with reference to this that you said, the recluse Gotama is a destroyer of growth? Now, Chakkunko Magandhi Rupa Ramam, Rupa Ratam, Rupa Sammuditam, Tan Tathagatasya Dantam, Guttam, Rakkitam, Sangutam, Tassacha Sangvaraya Dhamman Deseti. Now, this is something that we need to clarify. So, basically, it is not that Buddha preaches Dhamma while he himself is not following it. So basically he has taught the Dhamma by fully comprehending it and fully practically learned it or practically practiced it. So first of all he is mentioning that how much he has done the job. How completely he completed the job. Chakkunko Magandhi Rupa Ramam Rupa Ratam Rupa Samudam Tan Tathagata Sadantam. So the Buddha Tathagata has guarded that. Guttam, he has protected that. And restrained. And he has restrained basically Sangvaram. And then he teaches the Dhamma for its restraint. Now he is asking others also to restrain. So Buddha's faculties are, in that sense, are all restrained, already restrained. But unfortunately, typically, the forms actually Rupa Ramam, Rupa Ratam, Rupa Sammuditam. So they delights in forms. The I delights in forms. I takes delight in forms. I rejoices in forms. So we likes to see forms, beautiful sights. We like to get delighted in those beautiful sights, and those delighted get rejoiced, those delight these forms. Now that is the typical approach. So people are going here and there, they are going on various tours, safaris or picnics, whatever the names they are using. They want to kind of delight their eyes. They want to have some rejoice. They want to have some joy. They want to basically satisfy and gratify the senses. So that is a typical approach people are taking. So they may even spend a large amount even to do that. So basically they are going very far places just to gratify eyes. Just to see something. And that is something they really appreciate. They spend a fair amount of money for that. And they think that is their luck. That is their achievement. Or that is their good fortune. And that is where they really appreciate. That is what they really appreciate. And that is how they say that they are rich. So whatever sight they want to see, so they can immediately go and see. And they may take pictures and they keep it and they start looking at it again and again, remembering it, memorizing it, again and again visualizing it. So now these things are typically going on. But Buddha mentioned that has been tamed by the Tathagata. Now he has tamed it. Tan Tathagata Sadantam. And he has guarded, he has guttam. And Rakkitam, he has protected it. Sangutam, and he has restrained it. And he teaches the Dhamma for its restraint. Now he is asking others, to his followers also, to do the same thing. Now he is asking the point, was it with reference to this that you said, the recluse Gotama is a destroyer of growth? Now he is asking the question now. Now, when this Wanderer Magandhi is answering, it was with reference to this Master Gotama that I said, the recluse Gotama is a destroyer of the growth. Why is that? Because that is recorded in our scriptures. Now, we can see, so this is the exact point why Magandhi wants to use that term, some abusive type of term, phrase, and Buddha exactly pointing out why he has used that. He is asking the question, giving the answer, and he simply say, have to say yes or no. Now, in a way, the way he is questioning, the way the Buddha is questioning, also highlights in one sense in Magandhya that Buddha knew that. It is not that Buddha wants to know from Magandhya, rather he know that exactly something like this they have meant, and now simply Buddha wants to pass that message to Magandhya that he knew that context. So he is passing the message, asking to verify it, and this Magandhya is verifying that. Now, after having said that, so Buddha is asking the same question related to the sounds, related to the flavors, related to odors, related to tactile sensations, and even related to various mind objects. Manokho Magandhya Dhammaramo Dhammarato Dhamma Samudito So Tathagata Saddanto Gutto Rakkito Sanguto Tassacha Sangvaraya Dhamman Deseti. So Buddha mentioned that Buddha basically wants to guard the mind objects, protect, restrain, and he teaches the Dhamma for its restraint. Typically, the mind delights in mind objects, takes delight in mind objects, rejoices in mind objects, but Buddha has tamed that, guarded that, protected that, and restrained that. Now, this is totally related to thinking. So basically, people want to think too much. They don't know how to guard the mind. They don't know how to restrain the mind, how to tame the mind. So they simply allow the mind to think whatever it likes. So completely unguarded, unprotected, kind of a wild kind of mind. So mind can think many things. There is no restrictions. When you are talking, others can hear, and there can be a restriction. When you are doing something through the body, others can notice that, others can restrict that. So there is a restriction. There are government laws, social norms, so you can't break them. So there's a kind of a restriction. But with respect to the mind, there is no such restriction. One can think whatever they want. So they go on and on thinking, and ultimately they want to implement that through the words or through the mind, so through the body. And ultimately they can end up with a kind of a quarrel or some kind of a problem, kind of an issue. But anyway, there is no prohibition in thinking. So people are good thinkers. So they use the mind in a wild manner to think whatever they want to think. Fantasizing, daydreaming, memorizing, regretting, worrying, rumination. So many, many ways we can say how they are thinking. So ultimately they are getting sick, mentally ill, but they don't know still how to control their thinking, how to stop their thinking, particularly how to stop their harmful thinking. Anyway, now this is not only the place that Buddha teaches guarding of the senses, restraining of the sense faculties. So restrainment of the sense faculties actually is one part of the Bhikkhu Vinaya. So if we consider the Bhikkhu Vinaya, the discipline to the monks, nuns, there are mainly four categories comes under the sila. So Indriya Sangvara Sila, guarding of the senses, is one of that. Patimokkha Sangvara Sila, that is the adhering to the rules mentioned in the Patimokkha. So that is another part. And then what we call Ajiva Parishuddhi Sila, maintaining the good livelihood, is another part. And then when one is using various requisites, maintaining vigilance is another part. So likewise, there are four parts. Pachche Sannisita Sila, Indriya Sangvara Sila, Patimokkha Sangvara Sila. Likewise, there are four parts into the monk's sila. Now, it doesn't mean that the lay people don't need to restrain their senses. But whoever wants to have some growth in their spiritual side has to have this kind of a restrainment. So that's what we are going to explore. Why is it so important? And again, in the Dhammapada, Buddha mentioned Chakkuna Sangvaro Sadhu, Sadhu Sotena Sangvaro, Ghanena Sangvaro Sadhu, Sadhu Jivhaya Sangvaro. So all the names are there of the five faculties that one has to restrain eye, one has to restrain ear, one has to restrain the nose, the tongue and the body. And then manasa sangvaro sadhu, sadhu sabbata sangvaro. So Buddha highlights that one has to tame, restrain the mind also. And it is good to restrain everywhere. Sabbata sangvato bhikkhu sabba dukkha pamunchati. Only when one is well restrained, that one can be completely free from suffering. Now this is also an interesting point, that the restrainment appears like kind of a suffering. Because we are putting a restriction. Now, when one is going through certain precepts, it's a kind of a restricted environment. So you are not allowed to use whatever you want. If you want to go through a music, if you want to listen to music, if you want to see a film, so that is not basically allowed. Not even allowed at the 8 precepts level. Natcha Gita Vadita Visuka Dasana Mala Gandha Vilepana Dharana Mandana. Vibhusanatthana Veramani. So this is a kind of a precept available in the 8 precepts, available in the 10 precepts. So that means kind of a restriction is there. So typically people want to enjoy senses, gratify senses. But when comes to the sila, to the morality, so that's a certain amount of restriction. So people find it quite difficult. Now that is the theme why Magandhya is trying to defend. So these senses are there to gratify. These senses are there to use, so that one can enjoy senses. So using the eyes, one can see beautiful sights, one can enjoy. Through the ears, one can listen to beautiful music, one can enjoy. Through the nose, one can enjoy various fragrances. Through the tongue, one can taste various delicious food. Through the body also, one can say touch someone you really like or something that you really like, and one can enjoy. And through the mind, you can think whatever you want and one can enjoy. The enjoyment, pleasure principle. Now these are the typical way that in this karma loka, in this sensual world, we are trying to do, and that is what being encouraged. And that has become the main objective of our living. How much we can enjoy our senses. How much we can satisfy our senses. So that is how we measure the success. And then development in today's terms is that as much as possible, if we can very much satisfy our senses, so that the people mention it as a success. But on the other hand, when it comes to spiritual aspect, one has to guard senses, one has to restrain senses, one has to put certain restrictions. So it appears like a difficult task, it's a kind of a burden. It's very much like we are prohibiting or restricting the enjoyment. Therefore, it is mentioned by Wanderer Magandhya, so one is destroying the growth. In other sense that we can say, when one is restricting all these, basically a certain amount of control is happening, certain amount of hindrance is also happening to the so-called growth. So what is growth? So one can say, okay, growth is kind of the growth of the population. So there may be a kind of a restriction. Maybe how one is basically stopping in certain association. So kind of a restriction to the growth. So if one is somewhat satisfied with something little, so they don't want to buy so many things, so that people don't have to manufacture so many things. They don't have to endlessly find greedily about so many things. Then one can say it is a kind of a hindrance to the growth. If the economy is well open, if people have so much money, they can buy, they can import so many things. So as much as possible, they can buy. The buying power is there. And they are wealthy country. They are wealthy people. So they can buy so many things. They can satisfy their senses. So this is how we define. This is how we expect. And this is what we call success. On the other hand, if we are trying to restrict that, so then there will be a kind of a revolution that they don't want to do that. So it appears like kind of a restriction, kind of a threat to the society. So society actually always expect certain amount of growth, maybe in the population, maybe in their wealth, their satisfaction, and all this, how we are measuring is GDP. So anyway, so Buddha's teaching goes somewhat against this typical pleasure principle. And further, actually, it doesn't mean that one has become somewhat dry-hearted and doesn't have any kind of an enjoyment, doesn't have any kind of a happiness. But this restrictions or restrainment also is providing some sort of unhappiness that is not basically derived from the five senses. So typically we know only the satisfaction coming through the five senses, what we call as āmisa sukha, worldly happiness. On the other hand, if one is meditating, if one is practicing, at least time to time, one may go through certain blissful states. One may go through certain satisfied states, a contented states, very calm, tranquil states. That doesn't require any kind of a sensual gratification. That sort of a satisfaction is completely different from the worldly type of happiness. So the enjoyment is entirely dependent on your practice, and that happiness is away from or free from the faculties. So you are basically changing the mind, you are basically restraining the mind, purifying the mind. As a result of that, you are able to enjoy certain amount of a bliss. So that is why we call it as an unworldly kind of a bliss, niramisa piti. So most of the people even don't know that. They don't even heard about it. They haven't even heard about that such happiness is available for human beings. So what they know is only that the happiness derived through the senses only available. So they want to satisfy their senses, gratify their senses. But apart from that, there is a kind of a happiness available which is far more superior. So they don't even heard about it. Now, actually in certain suttas, Buddha basically explain more detail why they want to people want to have kind of a restriction. So there are interesting phrases like he's explaining to King Ajatasattu how this kind of a restriction, this kind of a restrainment, sense restrainment can lead to a kind of a blameless happiness, what we call as Abhyaseka Sukha. Kind of a unblemished kind of happiness, because you are maintaining a very purified mind. You are not using your senses to sort of blemish the mind, not going to pollute the mind, not going to tarnish the mind. So mind is kept as much as possible fairly purified. So typically our minds are already Avit defilements, already polluted. So the path is very much like towards the purification. So as much as possible, one is trying to purify the mind. But the opposite happens if one is not restraining, because even though you try to purify the mind while your meditation session, say if you are, once you go out of your meditating room or to the outside the monastery or outside your house, if you keep looking at things, if you keep hearing things which are completely detrimental to your practice, then ultimately you are the one going to suffer. Therefore, we need to see how we can protect our practice, how we can guard our practice. Through the practice, we are trying to purify the mind. So how are we going to sort of support that during the whole day, during our daily activities? So otherwise, it's quite difficult to do that, because even though you try hard during a meditation session to do some sort of a vipassana or any kind of a samatha practice, even though you try hard, unfortunately, if you are not maintaining enough sense restraint, if you are not guarding your senses, if you are not somewhat selective on what you do, you are not using enough clear comprehension, then ultimately what you have developed can easily flip away, can easily go away. So that's why we need to little concern as the followers of the Buddha. So it is not mere practice is enough. Rather, we need to maintain a conducive environment for that. So whom we are going to associate? What are the places that we are visiting? What are we going to see? What are the news that we are going to hear? Are we so interested about so much of news? Are we so interested of so much of films, music, odors, maybe various tastes? With whom are we having some intimate relationships? Now all these things actually count. So therefore we can't take the practice as a kind of single thing. It is actually supported by many things. So you can't single out the practice. Basically, practice depends on so many other external factors. So those external factors, actually we have to be a little responsible. Because otherwise, this becomes a never-ending process. Because again and again we are trying hard to practice, but unfortunately we are not restraining ourselves, going out and having parties and having too many associations, intimate relationships. And that could be detrimental to the practice. Again, we are coming and trying to practice. So that's not going to work. So when we are starting our practice, there may be various friends we might have to drop. If we had so many associations, if we had so many friends, among them there may be good friends, among them there are bad friends. Some may be pulling us towards the kind of unhealthy type of activities, harmful activities. And we need to sort of verify, we need to distinguish whom are the good friends who are supporting the spiritual path, whom are the people who are simply sort of promoting the world living, going through the on and on sansaric cycle, always promoting sensual gratification. And that we need to sort of have a kind of a honest verification, honest reflection. And accordingly, sometimes we may have to even discard such relationships. If we are to go in a more dedicated manner in our spiritual path. Otherwise, it's not going to work. And if you can remember, in the Sabbasava Sutta, there is one area called Sangvara Pahatabba, where one has to abandon the taints, abandon the fetters, abandon defilements through restraint. So even for nobles. Now, this doesn't mean that only the worldly people who want to become nobles, they have to restrain. But even the nobles, Buddha say, okay, you got to restrain. So that's why the term seeker. Seeker is a trainee. He's training himself. He's restraining himself. He's training further in the path. One may be a Sotapanna, stream winner. One may be a Sakadagami, once returner. One may be an Anagami, non-returner. But still Buddha say, you got to restrain. You are not yet an Arahant. Still the asavas are there. Influxes are there. So whatever defilement that you have defeated, so don't allow it to arise again. So if you are heedless, if you are not restraining yourself, so those dropped defilements, those depleted defilements can arise again. So that has even recorded in certain suttas, how certain monks have sort of went through a downfall. They were good in their practice, they were able to achieve something. They are even giving instructions or they are preaching. But they may go through certain unsuitable relationships and ultimately even disrobe. So those incidents are even recorded, certain cases are there. And even certain bhikkhus had abhinya, even the very strong psychic powers, and they were flying through the sky. And they have heard a woman's songs and they decline from the sky, completely downfall into their spiritual path. So this is a kind of a critical area. Sometimes we neglect. We think, okay, every time I need to meditate, always I have to be mindful. So that is there, that is true. But on the other hand, if we are not careful about what we are associating, what we are doing through our senses, so that can be another strong area that we need to consider. So that's why Buddha mentioned, if you have to see something, now try not to take the certain signs which are promoting defilements. Chakkuna rupan diswa na nimittaggahi hoti. Nanu byanjanaggahi. Assume that you couldn't restrain your eye, all of a sudden something was seen. And you are going through a certain path on the road and you have to see something. You couldn't restrain. Immediately it has happened. Now Buddha say, okay, don't look at too much about it. Don't find details about it. Don't go through all the subtle details. If your mind is so interested about those things and trying to get delight about it, then you will be in trouble. Because again, the unarisen defilements can arise. And arisen defilements can further grow. And mind become completely bewildered. Again, completely, you become blind. Completely unrestrained. And even the transgression can happen. So that's why Buddha again and again highlights the importance of the sense restraint. But anyway, Magandhya, according to Madandhya's book, this is not what they accept. They want to satisfy senses, gratify senses. And whoever says to restrain senses, they consider him as a destroyer of the growth. So we'll see what else that Buddha has to teach Magandhya on next week. So with that, I'd like to conclude today's Dhamma discussion or Dhamma sermon, Sutta teaching. Now I'd like to open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Also, Bhante, it sounds like there might be some internet connection issues a little bit today.
Yes, yes. I am sometimes experiencing a power cut. At that time, you know, I have a signal booster because we have very poor internet facility, kind of a reception. So sometimes during the power cut, so those facilities get restricted. So I get a kind of, poor connection at that time. I hope now things are back to normal. Is it?
Yes, it sounds much better now.
Okay.
Okay, great. So yeah, if anyone has any questions, feel free to raise your hand or send them via the chat.
So maybe today's topic could be quite straightforward and related to the morality. So if you have any question, you can ask. Yes.
All right, I'd like to invite Yashan. Give me a mute.
I hope you can hear me.
Yes.
Very good. Particularly, I wanted to sort of, I think there are monks and maybe nuns listening to this conversation as well as people like us who lives in this a married life and try to sort of understand. And so I wanted to ask this question, how these type of restraints sort of applies to individual like us who sort of goes in this path. And then I understand that there are certain type of needs for homes. I understand that the luxury you can sort of a need can be fulfilled through a generous, a need base per se, but if you want to sort of go for the, with all the bells and whistles. So as even selecting a motor vehicle for day-to-day transportation. And these are, of course, the material aspect. Those aspects also happens, so you sort of think about it. This is what I need, and I have enough wealth, and should I buy this, that, the other? So, in that context, my question is, in that context, what are your thoughts for people like us to sort of use that type of understanding to restrain our own thoughts or any type of material things or even different, to restrain, to enrich our path? So that's the question that I wanted to sort of ask. Thank you.
Good. I think with respect to the lay community, I feel that Buddha recommends being frugal in one sense. It could be quite relevant, like today, how we are going through certain economical problems. So sometimes people don't know how to sort of manage their wealth. So that is one area. So how one can become frugal. And on the other hand, that is again mention something called appicchata and santuttita. So typically, if we have endless desires as humans, then it is not a happy life. So there is no way that one become completely fulfilling all the desires. It's not going to happen. If one is having endless amount of desires, so you are going to be endlessly unsatisfied. But if you are trying to happy with very minimum, at the same time you've been contented, so that's a special skill that one has to develop. Appicchata and santuttita. Appicchata means that you can be happy with little, and you don't need many. Santuttita means with that little you have, you are quite contented. Not always become a slave to greediness or craving as we typically go through. Typically, people are sort of slaves to greediness, slaves to craving, so they have endless desires. Suppose that you have a little child that you are carrying, you are going through a supermarket, and whatever that child see, he's asking, crying again and again, asking that from the parents. So then the child become a real nonsense, a nuisance to parents, because there is no end. If our minds also behave like that, then it is not giving any satisfaction. Rather, mind become a real burden to them, burden to us. So that's why if we are able to have some kind of a restraint, if we know when it is enough, so that is something, at that moment we can be contented with what we have. And on the other hand, say when one is having a kind of a relationship, if one can maintain kind of trust in it, one can maintain certain amount of truthfulness to that, kind of sincerity to that. So that is actually giving a lot of satisfaction, rather than one is going through many relationships. So you are not being sincere to your own wife, sincere to your own husband, and one is going through various others' wives or husbands, adultery. Then there are many situations or difficulties arising within the family. Your children may suffer, or your wife or husband may suffer, the other party is going to suffer, and there would be many conflicts because of your unsatisfied sensory desires. So that is another area. So how one can be sort of restraining oneself to a very faithful, sincere kind of a relationship, and you are very much honest in that. So if both parties can do that, then actually it is deriving certain amount of happiness, because they don't want to go after to see whether the other party is so sincere, because one is trusting the other party. And even when the opportunities are there, they know, okay, they are not going beyond the restrictions, or not going beyond the kind of boundaries. So nowadays these things are not even think about. They simply use various mechanisms to stop childbirth or something like that, but they continue to use adultery. They continue to use sort of continue the misbehaviors, and being sort of faithful or being sincere is not even discussed. And on the other hand, Buddha recommend time to time, say, stop maintaining or stop doing the, you know, relationships, or rather say intimate type of things, so that you become celibate at least one day. That's why it is called uposatha. Say when you are going to the temple on the full moon day, so you are going through such kind of a restrainment. Say one day you are trying to be completely celibate, not even enjoying the senses. So this is how, in a way, we are slowly trying to adhere to that. It appears like difficult at the beginning, because we are used to gratify senses, but now we ourselves are trying to restrain the senses. So therefore we are trying or getting closer to what Buddha mentioned in this particular sutta, even though we can't do during the complete month. Say you are trying to do it honestly, completely, during a particular day. Maybe it's a full moon day, maybe the day that you visit the temple, or maybe you decide, okay, on this day I am going to meditate totally, I am not involved with any kind of a sense gratification. So these are the things actually we can see whether we have the potential. And we as human beings, we don't need to be a victim of our senses every time. Rather, there could be another type of happiness available. So that is depending on our restrainment. So that depends on our practice. So more we are successful in our practice, one can become more contented. So having contentment is the wealth. That's why now one is going to a different domain, santutti paramandana. Not that the amount of material wealth one is having, rather how much contentment one is having. So you can see how our terminologies, our norms are changing. So typically we think, okay, how much material wealth I have, how much money I have in the bank account, how many wives I have, how many cars I have, how many lands I have. So this is how we typically measure GDP. So how about including certain spiritual factors to that? How about including, say, mental satisfaction to that? So that is also something that we need to discuss. So that's why nowadays people are coming up with this and they are talking about mental well-being, not only the physical well-being. So they are talking about mental well-being. So when it comes to mental well-being, actually, we have to think about these lines. So how you are maintaining a good relationship, how you are maintaining mental culture, how you are maintaining kind of an inner satisfaction, inner contentment, and what are the factors causing that. So basically, in that sense, there are things that we can discuss, and Buddha, that's why mentioned to the lay followers, in general, kame sumicchachara veramane sikkhapadan samadhiyave. In the five precepts, the third one, say one is not getting involved with sexual misconduct. And one is not going through too much luxurious things when you are coming to the eight precepts. Say, what's that? Ucchasayana mahasayana veramani. So there are a kind of a little restriction is there. So you are not going to gratify senses by using various too luxurious kind of chairs, beds, etc. So that can actually take you to a sort of an indulgence. Kama sukallikanyo, satisfaction of the senses. That's why we need to little measure these things. I am not saying that immediately we can do everything, but we may have the potential to try these out. We can start maybe one day, how I can restrain myself one day, maybe then 2 days, maybe then 3 days. So likewise, we are sort of strengthening our inner qualities without being a victim to our sense desires. So that's what I like to share with you.
Yes, thank you very much, Bhante, and I understand. I also, you know, so with this journey, listening to different type of sermons from you and Venerable Dhammajiva as well, and I have sort of come to that realization, you know, the five precepts. There was a time that I was not even focusing on that, and then to realize how to adhere to the five precepts to the fullest and be very conscious about it as well. And then, so these kind of the journey that I have sort of used to build this path, and then, but there are certain times that I think we as lay people, we sort of think about, is this enough or should there be more, and how to sort of navigate this path, thinking about the aspect of children as well. So that's the reason why I asked this question from you, and because I think for us as the lay people, you know, like we have that type of a desire and how to sort of contain it. But I didn't want to sort of make it a, there was a time that I was trying very hard denying things, whereas now it has become through that understanding, asking the question from myself or asking the question from the family, is it necessary for us to have it? You know, why not this? So in that kind of context that I asked the question, so I think you have answered very well for me to sort of understand that. So thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah. So at the same time, actually, I like to add that now as we are growing in the practice, So Buddha takes us to another area, so what is called the Indriya Bhavana Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya last sutta. So now today's sutta actually talks about fair amount of restrainment. It appears like we are not supposed to use our senses. But on the other hand, when it comes to Indriya Bhavana Sutta, even when one is using the senses, so there are possibilities, once we develop to some extent, that one can have some amount of control on one's mind, basically. Say, once we see something through our eyes, if mind get agitated, and one may have the capacity to quickly return back to that equanimous state, unentangled state, or relaxed state, equanimous state, kind of a friction-free state. So how quickly we can return. So that depends on the practice. That means at the beginning we can't do that because we are so vulnerable, hindrances are so powerful. So that's why we need certain amount of restrictions or restrainment. But later that a certain amount of inner strength is developing, so that as a result of that, one can quickly return back to that uninvolved, unattached, non-grasping type of mental state that becomes available to oneself. So therefore, it doesn't mean that we have to stay every day on the same level. So there are many vipassana related supports on the way that we are getting. And there may be even further, there are situations even we see something, still mind doesn't want to get involved. Such kind of an inner quality is now available. Now, previously we don't have that. That's why we need to restrict. That's why we need to put regulations. That's why we need to put precepts. Because still that inner qualities are not developed. Inner spiritual faculties are not developed. But there are situations as we are growing further in the spiritual path. So these spiritual faculties start developing. Instead of the external bodily faculties, now one is developing internal spiritual faculties. So they become powerful. On such situation, even one see, mind appear like uninvolved. Mind appear like uninvolved. Mind stays calm. And basically, mind maintains clarity without getting disturbed. So that's an added benefit a vipassana yogi may going to have.
Thank you, Pante.
Yeah.
Okay, I'd like to invite the next person, Renuka. Feel free to unmute.
Hello, Sarane Bante.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Bante, actually, while I was listening to you, I was thinking, you know, now we as lay people or just the normal people living in this world, we as Buddhists, we like to follow the five precepts, at least. But time to time, people make mistakes and they break the precepts.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, what I understand is the best way to correct ourselves is to understand the mistake we did, understand where we have broken the precept, and realizing that it shouldn't be done in the future. So keep away of doing it again and again. Is it right, Bhante, if I say that, you know, or if I think like that?
Yes, yes. That's the same thing. So that's what Buddha mentioned.
Because
that's what Buddha mentioned. Basically, there are possibilities that one can be somewhat heedless as a result of that, may break a precept. But the important thing is humbly understand that, humbly accept it, and then make a resolution not to do it again. Then only be the growth.
Yeah, actually, the other day I was talking to one of my children, and you know, they are not people who are meditating or doing anything on the path, but I'm trying to tell them, you know, if you make a mistake, then if you understand that it was wrong, then it's best for you to keep away from that. So this is what good for the society and good for the for everybody. So I was, again, I was thinking whether I have done the right way of telling them, you know, because if you say not to do it, for them to restrict, sometimes children won't listen, you know.
If
they don't do that,
yes,
yeah, they won't listen, but, you know, but they can come up with so many excuses, you know. Okay, I did it because of this, but I was trying to tell them, think about it in your side. And if you have done something wrong, you correct yourself, not the other big person. So while I was listening to you, I was thinking, you know, whether that is what, how we can help others or and help ourselves too, one day in this world, you know, when we are living in this world. So that is what I want to, just to clarify whether my understanding and my advice was right.
yeah, correct. Basically, I mean, we have to use some strategical ways how to communicate to children or to any others. So, I mean, Buddha also mentioned, put yourself onto their shoes and see what happens if you go through this kind of situation. Now, say you want to abuse someone, you want to blame someone. At that moment, if someone is blaming you, how are you going to feel like? So, likewise, we can simply put ourselves into the situation, we can put their shoes and see how we might face it. So likewise, we can use various similes, various strategies to restrain ourselves, to, you know, to become a good person. And such, and on the other hand, there are instructions that Buddha mentioned. Say before, rather than mother coming and telling or father coming and telling not to do, rather, Buddha mentioned, okay, you yourself take the responsibility. Before you do something, just reflect. Just reflect whether is it useful to me, whether is it useful to the others, or is it harmful to me or harmful to the others. So if the answer coming like, yes, it is useful to me, it is useful to others, okay, you can continue your task. If not, please drop it. And between also you can reflect. Now you are continuing the task. So in between also you do a honest reflection. So I am doing a particular task. Is it useful? Is it useful to me? Is it useful to the others? Or is it harmful, or is it harmful to the others? Now if you found it is harmful, okay, now better stop it. At least now you better stop it. No, if you found yes, it is beneficial, it is useful to me, it is useful to the others, okay, you can continue. And then Buddha mentioned, okay, now you have completed the task. And after completion also, Buddha says, okay, you got to do the same reflection. Check what I have done is completed, and is it useful to me? Is it useful to the others? Or harmful to me or harmful to the others? Pachavekitva, pachavekitva, kayana kammam katabba. So using the body, using the words, using the mind. So Buddha asked us to apply this kind of a verification, an honest reflection. And it is basically depends on the individual. It's not that Buddha coming and telling or putting a restriction, or it is not the parents or teachers coming and putting the restriction. So we ourselves do a kind of a honest reflection, a kind of a mature way of doing things. Like, we can't say that everybody is capable of doing that, because most of the people are, you know, desire bound or desire driven, craving driven. And another area is the development of the mindfulness. Because when one develops mindfulness, that impulsive reactions become fairly restrained. Say, one is not trying to restrain oneself for the sake, rather in a different approach you are developing mindfulness. As much as possible you are trying to be in the present moment, as much as possible you are trying to investigate the present moment phenomena. So you are developing the mindfulness plus clear comprehension. So an added benefit is there, where you are now gain certain amount of moral shame and moral dread. So one important result of the development of mindfulness and the development of clear comprehension is the availability or is the growth of the moral shame and moral dread. So you are now coming to the arena of the restraint, or now you are coming to the arena of the morality. But you started with meditation, you started with mindfulness practice, but you can get into it, automatically paves the way towards the morality. You can refer one interesting sutta called Sati Sampajanya Sutta, available in the Anguttara Nikaya. So there Buddha beautifully mentioned how mindfulness and clear comprehension leads towards moral shame and moral dread, which leads towards that restrainment, basically onto the morality.
Yeah. Bhante, in that case, actually, for somebody to understand that he was wrong, that the virgin went wrong, to that clear comprehension or mindfulness should be there, isn't it?
Definitely, definitely. Yes, yes.
Yeah, otherwise we always point the other person wrong, and you know, we always find fault in others,
correct,
but never think of finding fault in ourselves, isn't it?
Correct.
Thank you, Bhante. Thank you very, very much. Teruvan Saranai.
Yeah, Teruvan Saranai.
Right, thank you. I will turn the chair to Devi for the next question.
Yes, thank you, Jennifer. My question really, Bhante, is you spoke about, you know, sila, and that the monks use, there are four types of sila. I'm sure you have told us that before, but can you very briefly tell us, just go very briefly, point form, what those are, so that, because you said lay people also, I mean, if they want to, they can follow those things if they are able to or have the capacity. So, do you mind just briefly mentioning that?
Yeah. So, first one, we can say the Pathimokkha Sangvara Sila, so the precepts. So, as monks, we basically have, as Upasampada monks, have 227 rules, and that is the main primary kind of monastic code. So, whatever the, you know, the precepts listed down there, so one has to follow that, what we call as the Pathimokkha Sangvara Sila. So for you, we can say, okay, the 5 precepts or 8 precepts or 10 precepts. So that is what the Pathimokkha Sangvara Sila for us. And then the second one, we can say the Indriya Sangvara Sila, what we discussed today. So restraining one's faculties.
Six sense bases.
Guarding one's base. Six sense bases. So there is no restriction as that only the monks have to guard that. So we discussed today, okay, whoever practitioner, either monk or a layperson, he has to do the same thing if he wants to, say, get some result. So restrainment of the faculties.
Yes.
So that is the Indriya Sangvara Sila. And then there is the Pachya Sannisita Sila. Pachya Sannisita Sila is where, so now there are various requisites that you are using. Say you are using arms, you are using, you know, food, you are using clothes, that is the robes for monks, and you are using the senasana, the dwelling places for monks, and you are using the medicine. So whenever you are using all these basic requisites, so Buddha mentioned, okay, you need to do a reflection. For what purpose am I using this? Am I using the correct amount? Or am I indulging with it? So am I getting any kind of a defilement around these requisites? Say, for example, you got a very, very beautiful car. You got a very beautiful house. Now you can indulge with it. You can even criticize another person, and you can simply put yourself very up. You can be conceited because you have that. So all these requisites, how are we going to use so that we are not harming our spiritual qualities? So how are we comparing our requisites with another person? And if we can say, okay, my requisites are the best ones, I am the superior, and you are very unlucky, that's why you don't have all these things, you are an inferior, you are a downcast. So one can say so. I mean, so the wealth can become a, wealth can become a cause of developing defilements. But on the other hand, if one is careful, if one is using the honest reflections, so why am I using food? For what purpose? Why am I using clothes? For what purpose? Why am I using a particular dwelling place? For what purpose? And why am I using medicine? For what purpose? So likewise, you know that on the poor days that people know how to do their reflections. So these reflections help us to avoid, minimize defilements, and again to know the proper amount. So those kinds of things are there. So that is called Pachaya Sannisita Sila. And then then the last one is called Ajiva Parishuddhi Sila. So as monks, we are not allowed to do several things. Now say for money, giving medicine, for money, reading the horoscope, or for money, doing the fortune telling, forecasting, any kind of, you know, unsuitable activities, giving medicine and all that, so many things are there. So all that comes under the Ajiva Parishuddhi Sila. So one has to avoid all that. And for the laypersons, those are the five kinds of trades. You have heard about that in the livelihood, five wrong type trades, that trading slaves, trading animals for slaughter, and trading the meat, then poisons, weapons. So those are the unsuitable trades that one can involve with being a layperson. So that is comes under the Ajiva Parishuddhi Sila. And so in the Noble Eightfold Path, you can see it is repeated as the Samma Ajiva.
So we are doing some of it. We can't do all those precepts that the monks are doing and all that, but we are trying to anyway.
No, I think it is not really necessary for a layperson to try to, you know, observe monks' precepts. Rather, we can compare, you know, as we are doing right now. So what are the Indriya Samvara Sila that I can adhere to? What is the precepts-wise, what are the things I can adhere to? So what are the, with respect to my own requisites, how I can use so that it is more conducive for my practice? And what is my own profession? Am I doing something good for me? Am I doing something bad for the others during my profession? So likewise, you can become a good human being by doing such kind of an honest evaluation.
That's fine, Bhante. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
You have sort of touched on that before, but it's nice to get refreshed, you know.
Yes.
For you to refresh our memories. So thank you for that. Also, just a comment that, you know, the previous question.
Yeah.
You know, the Buddha also encouraged people, you know, out of compassion to bring it to the attention of somebody, you know. Out of compassion, he did it also, no, Bhante?
Mm-hmm.
If someone was doing something that should be done, or whatever, out of compassion, he used to encourage. I mean, he did it himself and encourage others also. And at the same time, as you said, is it the correct time? Is it beneficial for both and so forth?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's not a bad thing, no, Bhante?
Not at all, yeah.
Yes.
So there are people... So Buddha mentioned that there are people, say, while they're doing good, so they encourage others also to do the good. That is something Buddha appreciate. Exactly. Yes.
That's okay. Thank you for that, Bhante.
Okay.
Thank you, Bhante. I just sent you another message that came through the chat. Hopefully my pronunciation is okay, Bhante.
Oh, I see.
Reverend Sir Awas Sarai.
What thoughts get added onto Bhava?
Sorry?
Yeah, okay, I'm trying to read it. Yes.
Okay. What thoughts get added onto Bhava? What thoughts don't for a lay person? Thank you very much.
Bhava. I don't know what why the term Bhava comes here into the picture. Bhava. What thoughts get added onto Bhava?
Would this person like to unmute and maybe ask the question directly?
Don't know, someone has raised the hand. Darshika has raised the hand. Probably she can explain her question, or I don't know whether...
No, sorry, it's for the next question. I have a separate question, sorry.
Okay, then we'll go through that first. Please ask your question.
My question? I want to know whether equanimity, Beksha, and the middle path is the same sort of, but there's a subtle difference. Is it a stage where, as you develop?
Yeah, and the equanimity is a very narrow term in that sense. Say, one can say you have equanimity, equanimous feelings is one area.
Yes.
But equanimity is even more broader in that sense. Say, you are being equanimous. You are maintaining an equanimous mind even when, life's going through up and down, you are trying to be equanimous. So then it becomes more broader than the typical equanimous feeling. And the middle path even is more, advanced in that sense. Equanimity is part of it, but the middle path is a complete practice, we can say. It consists of the Noble Eightfold Path and the Paṇicchasamuppāda and that sort of the basic teachings of the Buddha. So we can say middle path comprising of all those.
What would you take?
Say the Noble Eightfold, the Four Noble Truths, we can say.
And again the middle path.
Sometimes Buddha mentioned as the Paṇicchasamuppāda, idappacceta. Sutta. That's a beautiful sutta. Majjena dhammande se tathagato. Without taking the extremes, say Buddha mentioned preached Dhamma with the middle, so that is the middle is called the Paṇicchasamuppāda. So Paṇicchasamuppāda is also considered as the middle path. So likewise, middle path basically is the core teaching of the Buddha.
Avoiding dislikes and likes, that is equanimity.
Equanimity actually becomes part of the middle path. So as you develop the middle path, we can say your mind come to the middle. Your mind comes to the comfortable area. Your mind comes to a more equanimous area where you are not being carried away by the sensual desires. So you are not being carried away by pleasures, and you are not being depressed or disturbed by the sorrows, lamentations. Rather, you are able to maintain your mind more stable in the middle path. So then you are more and more equanimous. So equanimity becomes a kind of a noble enlightenment factor, upekkha sambojjanga, in that sense. So therefore, as one is developing the path, equanimity becomes one of the available spiritual quality for oneself.
Thank you very much, Vante, for the nice explanation.
Okay.
Thiruvan Sarnai.
Yeah, Thiruvan Sarnai. So, Jennifer, I can't really understand the context of this question. So, what thoughts get added onto Bhava or Bhava? I can't understand what he or she is asking.
Yeah, I sent a message to the person to see if they'd like to unmute and ask the question, but I didn't get a response back. Or if this person would like to clarify via chat, please do. Do you have any questions on your side, Bhante?
No.
Okay. I will give this person my email address as well in case they'd like to follow up via email. But I believe that's all of the questions for today then, Bhante.
Okay. Then we'll wind up the session for today. So we have spent 1.5 hours, and we were able to discuss some Dhamma and listen to a Sutta teaching. So with that, we were able to accumulate some merit. We share these merits with the celestial beings and the past relatives and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to have for us the capacity to follow the Buddha's teaching. And let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha jabummattha deva naga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha jabummattha deva naga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasattha jabummattha deva naga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparam. Idangvo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idangvo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idangvo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.